It's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. My guest today is McMurray Whale, the best name in lithium and one of my favorite analysts on the planet. We recorded this during Benchmark Minerals EV Fest, so Mac was the first live guest on the first live Global Lithium Podcast. We get into the impact of COVID on Mac's thesis of how lithium will play out over the next 5 to 6 years. We talk about the inevitable shortage that's coming and why Mac believes that the price spike that will happen in the next couple of years may be greater than what happened in 2015, 2016. We talk about the staying power of lithium iron phosphate as a cathode product and why high nickel hasn't run roughshod over lithium iron phosphate as many people projected. It's a very short but very information-packed episode, and when Mac's segment's done, I will come on and talk a little bit about why I believe lithium stocks jumped so much in the past week. And with that, Mac Whale.
And everything in the top right is in the sun is what you would imagine, you know, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Microsoft, the staples, Walmart. And in the rain, it's energy, financials, some industrials.
You're listening to the Global Lithium Podcast.
The best name in lithium, Mac Whale. Mac is a former podcast guest, and I'll get right into it. My first question for you, Mac, is in our first episode, we talked about investor sentiment at the time, but we're living in really unprecedented times right now. So how have you seen at the macro level investor sentiment change and adjust to the way we're currently living? And when you, after you give us the macro sense, where do you see us from a lithium
perspective? Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me. I think the macro situation is really one in which we are, you know, we're in a recession. Obviously, that's different than the 2008 recession. It's not a balance sheet recession. Typically in these types of situations, we see the market obviously correct sharply, and then it recovers fast, and it usually retests. And so internally at our firm, what we spend a lot of time arguing about is whether the stimulus was fast enough to prevent a retest. So, you know, the market has been fantastic. You know, NASDAQ is reaching new highs. You know, it's led by tech, healthcare, but obviously transportation and banks and lenders have been nailed. So there's this sort of fight between, are we going to see a retest where you see lower lows for a smaller set of companies, or are we off to the races again? And right now it's the no retest camp that's winning, which is why you've seen these jumps in the stock, in stocks most recently. But if we're to have a retest, we really need to see, like, what's going to drive that? Will a new outbreak drive it back down? Will the true impact of unemployment over the next 6 months sort of rear its ugly head? And then we find ourselves in a retest. Right now it doesn't look like it, but there are not many types of bear markets that don't retest. It's very rare. So we have a technical quant analyst that looks at a sun rain chart, and everything in the top right is in the sun is what you would imagine, you know, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Microsoft, the staples, Walmart. And in the rain, it's energy, financials, some industrials. So when you then say, well, where does that leave lithium? The issue is really you know, these are the major producers are different from the developers. And you and I have spoke a lot about this in the past. The technical people will put lithium like developers in what they call materials X gold. So those types of stocks are like copper and nickel. You do not want to be in those stocks right now. So sentiment is low. But the producers like Albemarle and Livent, SQM, like the majors, are much more like chemicals companies. So they're a sort of a mid-cycle performer. So we're not there yet where those should really be performing. And yet the stocks have been pretty good. I think when you look at Albemarle, And just interrupt me if you want clarification, Joe, but I'll just ramble on a bit here. But if you think of
the away.
Okay. The 2 year decline from late, remember Albemarle and all the other lithiums hit a peak in the late 2017. It ran, they just went from, you know, $140 to $65. Like they halved in 2 years. Then we get this rally back in January, February, where it looks like everyone has absorbed the idea that the automakers in China went through a rough 18 months. The guys in Europe are not doing all that great, but it's been absorbed. The lithium price is low, but it's been absorbed, I think, by the market. And the stocks start to rally because they were overdone in high valuations. They came back down. They were overdone to the downside, and they were rallying back. So Albemarle hits $90 in February, and then the pandemic hits, and then it goes right back down to 50. And so when you draw a channel, Albemarle was, and on all the other lithiums look the same, the producers, it's right back in that channel by the time we hit a low in the market, and it's since rallied back up. So, you know, if you think about it now, you then look at valuation, and Albemarle's at 15 times EBITDA. And that's not cheap. Maybe it's 12 times next year. Still not cheap. So if you look at it and say, well, those estimates aren't very, the analysts don't know what they're doing, right? Like in this situation. So it's really difficult. So, but you have to ask yourself, is the 15 times multiple really a 20 times multiple? Because the estimates are not low enough? Or is it really an 8 times multiple? And I would argue today it's closer to 20 times than 8. And so they're still fairly expensive given the uncertainty. So that, I think we need to see those, you know, and if those look a little cheaper before we see big portfolio managers step in. When you look at the developers or say the Aussie listed stocks, they're more like commodity plays and they're going to be mid-cycle performers. So right now the dynamics of the downstream, of the upstream are different than the downstream. And those stocks are going to take a while before the supply and demand of, say, spodumene to play out before they should really rally back. So that's kind of where we're sitting today in terms of the investors' sentiment.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Zalandez, a brine field services company providing real-time, actionable data that is saving both exploration companies and producers money in both drilling and completion activities. Find them at www.zelandez.com.
Okay, let me ask a related question. So when we talked a year ago, or a little over a year ago, you talked about your process. And one of the things in your process was putting together a financial model of the companies that you follow. So along with that, with the virus situation and with so many different voices out there talking about, you know, what happens to EV penetration. So what's your call on that? And how have you adjusted your models for the changing environment we have? And how does EV penetration then roll back to supply, demand, price?
Yeah, so I guess the headline number, the number that a lot of people focused on was sort of, you know, 1 million tons LCE 2025 or mid-20s. So let's just take that as the working hypothesis back in 17, 18. And it wasn't really moving that much. I think now we're actually in the 2020s, right? And we know that the investments haven't been made to get there, and we're in a pandemic and there's been delays to the auto space. So that's off the table. I mean, I don't care how many plants someone says they're gonna build or wherever, it's not happening. And I think I'm sort of mirroring investors, right? So I could be wrong, but this is sort of the thinking right now. I can't go into BlackRock and say to them, oh yeah, 1 million tons LCE 2025. Okay, how do you get there? Like, and so what happens is there's sort of a consensus of where it should go. It's clearly not delayed. Like it's delayed to the latter half of 2020s. So we still get there. But is it 2028, 29, or is it 2026? I think the issue is it's more than a year and less than four, right? So when you don't need to be any more accurate than that when you're looking at the stock prices, because there's still 6 or 7 years to get there. So I think what happens is that's about as accurate as you need to go. So I push, I have the split the difference. I have, I say, okay, put it out to 2027, 2028. And then I use that same million tons again. And I literally, all the models get pushed out. So obviously that hurts a developer that hasn't been financed yet differently than it hurts, say, an Albemarle or an SQM. So what I basically do is I, in that rethinking of the modeling, I push those things out and then I say, well, what's going to happen over the next year? Because those two things, those bookend my analysis, right? So on the mid-2020s, I've pushed that out. And then looking at the short term, I think you just then look at Albemarle, SQM, and you, you know, Ganfeng, and you look at the various news and their commentary. And you know, a 300,000 ton year in 2020, you know, we know we're some error bar around that with small, you know, back in the 10 to 15% growth off that in 2021 is about all you can really do in terms of piecing together an analysis, because you know you're going to be wrong. You just don't know. You try to get ballpark, right? And so that's how my thinking has shifted. I've pushed out 2025 by 2.5 years. And then I've taken, we're sitting in 2020, looking back at 2019, hoping we could get to somewhere like that, right? So that's kind of where I'm bookending it and then running numbers based on those two scenarios.
Take a slight detour from the podcast with Mac to comment on something that's on my mind. Today is June 6th. Yesterday, June 5th, was my younger daughter Kaylin's 28th birthday. It's also the birthday of Breonna Taylor, who would have been 27 yesterday had she not been shot to death in her apartment by plainclothes policemen on March 13th. In what was, I guess, can only be described as an unimaginable tragedy. So why am I talking about it? I guess because, you know, yesterday, Kaylin tried to raise $500 online in memory of Breonna Taylor for an organization that is working to change the kind of situations that lead to the tragedy that happened just a few months ago. And as we know, in recent days, there's been many more unfortunate things happening in this country. Well, through the grace of God and the goodness of people, as I sit here now, Kaylin's efforts with matching funds from a couple of organizations have raised over $10,000, which is just a nice and hopeful thing that hopefully that 20 years from now, we'll look back and things will be better than they are today. But I just wanted to say that I'm proud of my daughter for having the heart to do that. And both of my daughters are involved in trying to make positive changes. I'm not always on the same political side of the fence as my daughters, but I am always proud of them and the heart they have for other people. And I just wanted to give a shout out to both of them, but in particular, yesterday being my daughter's birthday and how she spent it trying to raise money to affect change. And happy birthday, Kaylin, and happy birthday to Breonna Taylor. And with that, we'll get back to Mac in the podcast. Well, do you see a price spike in the next 3 or 4 years?
So that's where I was going to go. I think, so if the one takeaway, I think, is with the stocks trading where they are, with the plans to cut on CapEx because they need to preserve capital, we know we're going to get into the exact same situation as in 2015, but way worse. Because now demand has notched up. Like we're, if you remember, like we're double the demand we were from a handful of years ago. And every incremental bit of capacity, you know, you're reaching into the harder and harder projects that take longer and are more technically challenging. So you know that when that you know, the long-term plans start to take shape and the demand builds beyond 300,000, you're going to all of a sudden be in a, the whole industry will be in a situation where there's just not been enough capital deployed to go from 330 or wherever to 400. Like, that's going to be a real, really difficult challenge. Forget about a million. And then you're going to get a big price spike again. So I think we're back in those days again, where the timelines are just insufficient to drive up the capacity into in that time frame. So I think it's 2 years.
That's the way I think. I believe Benchmark has come out and said the same or a similar thing. Our timing might be a little different. But the interesting thing to me is for you to go out there with that story to anybody with a straight face. I mean, people are so, from my perspective, so cynical now that it's almost like you've just got to wait until we hit the wall.
Yeah.
And let whatever's going to happen, happen. And I think we're going to have a huge price run up. And I got a hydroxide price projection 2 days ago. It was actually came off the WeChat group I'm on. So from a credible source in China. And he had the price in China at the equivalent of 24,000, wow, 3 or 4 years out. So it's interesting how people are thinking about it. Let's switch gears yet again. And I want to draw on your technical skills, since you're one of the few analysts who are deep technically. When you look at the resurgence of LFP and the blade technology from BYD, the CTP from CATL, what are your thoughts on that? And then how does that play into the hydroxide narrative that high nickel was going to drive everything? And now you're having test talk about certain Teslas having LFP as their source.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I remember when the whole high nickel cathode technology was getting a lot of attention. And I remember sitting in the conferences, and I hadn't been back in the lithium space long enough to sort of stand up and kind of go, no. And I just kind of sat there and sort of sucked it up. And it's interesting now, because what I've learned in covering industrial technology stocks for more than 20 years is the challenge for a new technology is that it has to be way, way, way better. It has to be orders of magnitude better performance at any price. Like, you don't care about the price of it, because the thing is so much better, you gotta have it. So the question I sort of put back to the people that are advocating that is, high nickel that much better than LFP? I mean, orders of magnitude better. So the question is, we can argue that, right? We can debate it. But my point is that if it's not, and if we're debating it, it means you can have a debate on it, that the incumbent, let's call LFP the incumbent technology, it will continue to be subject to so much innovation, because the supply base and the automakers hate changing technology. They absolutely prefer to evolve technologies, not have a revolution. So it makes complete logical sense that the guys invested in LFP will say, look, like, we've got all these low-hanging fruit, we'll knock them off, and new things appear as a low-hanging fruit, and we'll knock them off. And so incrementally, the LFP technology is going to keep getting better, and it will have applications that the high nickel just, it's like, well, it doesn't give me that much of the benefit, and the costs aren't so much better that I have to switch. So I think it's fascinating, because there are the non-monetary issues around safety that will always be able to, for certain buyers, that will be something that they want to retain. So long story short, you got to keep in mind that unless there's a real incentive to change, it's better just to keep evolving. And that's what we're actually seeing here. It makes complete logical sense. And I think then when you translate that to hydroxide versus brine, I think the outlook for brine and new brine development is actually really good, because I do not believe those numbers out of the Atacama. And we can talk about in terms of growth, right? And we're hoping a whole other can of worms, right? But the issue is, and I wrote about this 2 years ago, like, that is not easy to do, because essentially it's a potash play. It wasn't built from scratch for lithium, right? So there's real challenges. So, but let's say you can still double it. You still need more brine. because if you could get good brine to put into carbonate, you'd go there all day long. I think we're going to have this bifurcation of the two downstream chemicals into two different supply chains. And this is exactly the thing that will drive that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we were both saying the same thing about when the Corfo SQM deal was done and Mr. Bertrand was talking about 400,000 tons out of the Atacama in 2025. I think that's been revealed as the pipe dream that it is. But okay, we've got a couple of other places to go with other guests. Yeah. So I'm just going to leave this at rapid fire. One rapid fire question for you. This is a softball one. You don't need to worry about it. If you could live in any city in the world outside of Canada, where would it be and why?
Oh, outside of Canada. Oh,
Well, I didn't want you to say, "Oh, I'm going to move from Toronto to Vancouver." That's
that's true.
Too easy.
I've actually, a soft spot has developed for Argentina, if you can believe this. I love going to Buenos Aires, but I would probably want to explore the south part, and I have not been there. So to me, I could, just notwithstanding all the politics and everything else, I think I would love to go there and spend like a year just really embedding myself in somewhere in South America. And that would probably be the start.
All right. Sounds good. We'll leave it there.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Zalandez, for bringing this episode of the Global Lithium Podcast to you today. Zalandez prides itself on providing a new way of doing things in the lithium brine space. Are you tired of low confidence data, lack of actionable insights, and multi-day turnaround? Then head to www.zalandez.com to learn more. I always appreciate Mac Whale's insights and his depth of experience and knowledge. Mac does the work, makes the site visits, talks to management, but anybody can make a site visit and talk to management. You have to have the right background and you have to have some basic understanding in order to make that valuable. So I think Mac has that package, and I will continue to have him on as a guest. Simply because I benefit from Mac's experience. I was asked many times in the past week about the run-up in most of the lithium stock prices, and I really sadly think that's a false flag. I do not believe that this is the turn yet. They're just not fundamental reasons for it. We did have some subsidy announcements that I think have generated optimism that the EV market will be helped, which is obviously going to help lithium stocks. But I think lithium investors, by and large, have been plagued by short-term thinking. I think that's still the case. In my mind, the time in the past few months to buy an Albemarle was when it was in the low 50s. It's now in the high 70s. I don't see it as a buy. I think Mac referenced the fact that Albemarle's not really cheap right now. I'm not giving investment advice. I'm just telling you how I look at these things. And I said many times, both on the podcast and on LinkedIn, that I wouldn't buy Albemarle as long as the old management was in place. Now we've had a change at the top with the CEO, and Albemarle has two of the best assets in the world. So when I saw the stock price drop into the low 50s, it was time for me to buy, and I did. Similar thing with Standard. I saw an opportunity when it hit 30 cents. I saw it as a buy. It went over a dollar last week. Anybody that listens knows I have accumulated LAC since 2016 and continue to do so. I'm not a buyer at five. Am I a buyer anytime
There's a two? Yes. Am I a buyer in the low threes? Yes. Those are the kind of prices that I've been accumulating LAC at. And again, not investment advice, but that's how I look at it. I think LAC is a $20 stock in 3-4 years when Kachari's producing and Thacker's producing, or Thacker's, you know, in the middle of a build. But, you know, right now, you know, you have to look at what drives stock prices and what makes sense. I've done really well trading Livent in my retirement accounts during COVID. And, you know, I talked about it even last fall that, you know, I bought at 5, I sold it pushing 9. Do I think Livent's a buy at 7 or 8? Not really. Do I think it's a buy at 5? Yeah. But that's just the way I look at it. I think what you really need to do is buy quality assets. When the price spike comes, and it will come, I used to think it would happen before the end of 21. It could be delayed to 22, but there is going to become a very obvious shortage in lithium chemicals. And I keep saying that. Why do I say it? Again, even this week, Bloomberg NEV came out with their new EV report, and it says, you know, 2020 EV penetration is 2.7%, and it will be 10% in 2025 and 28% in 2030. You know, the industry can't respond to a tripling in EV demand by 2025, because that really means the lithium needs to be available by 2024. And if you look at the lack of investment, it's simply not going to happen. I'm not going to keep banging this drum. You've heard me say this before, but people did ask me to comment on the run-up in lithium stocks, and I would simply say, you know, maybe it sticks. I believe it's a false flag. I think you'll be able to acquire the stocks that you're looking for at lower prices soon. And I'm talking about the bigger players for the most part. With, you know, it's been a kind of a universal rise in the lithium players, but I think you really have to be careful about the prospects of the companies you buy. And with that, I'm going to say I look forward to putting out the Rodney Hooper episode next weekend. Rodney has, I listen to everything Rodney writes and says. I don't listen to what he writes, I actually read it, but not to put too fine a point on it. Anyway, I think you're going to enjoy my dialogue with Rodney and some of the comments I have about it next week on the Global Lithium Podcast.
This has been another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Global Lithium, or under my name, Joe Lowry, on LinkedIn. If you want to leave me a message or ask a question, you can go to the anchor.fm website. That's anchor.fm/globallithium, and leave me a voice message. Thanks very much for listening.